Welcome to the Creative Play and Podcast Network. Join us as we share our favorite RPGs, one-shot games, tabletop games, reviews, and convention panels. Sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Kelly, aka Trixie from Ragnarok and Roll, assigned to Ragnarok Story, and Tilda Wimblewick from D&D Journey of the 5th Edition. First off, I would just like to say thank you to everyone for listening to our varied adventures, as well as for rating us on iTunes and RPGpodcast.com. If you haven't rated us yet, we would greatly appreciate it if you could. And if you're looking for more ways to support our efforts, we are now on Patreon, a great site where you can help us continue making more podcasts, as well as some special surprises for our patrons. If you can, please look us up at www.patreon.com/cppn. Every little bit helps. And again, thank you for listening.
So, guys, welcome to Why Are Star Wars Fans So Toxic? And What Can We Do About It? That last question will hopefully reveal itself by the end of the panel. But until then, let's start out by introducing ourselves. I will lay down a few ground rules as moderator. And then we can get started with the chaos that I'm sure will ensue, much to the delight of everyone. We'll start on this end and we'll work our way down.
I'm Jay Smith. I'm very pleased to be here. This is my last panel, my last convention of a year-long tour. I'm revisiting the conventions that I loved. And this is, I come from Harrisburg, so I flew all the way out here to see these people after 5 years. Very happy to be talking about Star Wars, and then I'm going to take a very long nap. So I apologize for my pandemic telework cosplay, but I am just too exhausted to care more. So, well, thank you. I'm a podcaster, audio drama producer, and writer, and I'm probably more of a Ghostbusters fan than Star Wars, but I think the fandoms are compatible.
My name is Shelby McBride. I'm actually on ConCon. I helped with the programming. Put myself on this panel.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I'm like, I want that one. I've actually been going to Tuscon since we were both 19. We're the same age. I'm also a photographer, an artist. I dabble at writing, mostly sarcasm.
Already, what you know. Write what you know.
I do know sarcasm. And I've been a huge Star Wars fan. One of my favorite first movies I've ever seen is Star Wars. I was 4, but I remember that chick going right over. And I was in love the first time.
Awesome. My name is Chaz Kemp. I am your artist guest of honor for at least a few more hours. I have done probably a little over 300 different book covers, magazine covers, and things like that for a variety of independent authors, different publishing companies, gaming companies, etc. However, more relevant is I am a Star Wars fan. I didn't ever get to see the original movies in the theaters and things when they first came out, not until the ones with, you know, the little guys, the Ewoks and stuff. That was the movie I got to see in the theater, and I thought it was fantastic. Since then, of course, I've watched Star Wars multiple times, including all of the television shows and everything like that. Big fan. I love it. I have learned to really admire and really give huge amounts of props to George Lucas because of his journey and what it took to actually make the first one. And so, you know, at first I was a little like, yeah, George Lucas, he's a little full of himself. And then after that, I was like, oh, he actually went through a lot to do this. So I offer him all props. And yeah, so that's where I come from.
Anyway. I'm S.J. Schauer. I'm author and engineer. And if it's not obvious, Star Wars and spaceships fan. And yeah, my first exposure to Star Wars was in a movie theater, is in a drive-in movie theater when I was 3 months old.
You remember, but you're raised right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I was raised on Star Wars, and I have my opinions on it. And as an author and an engineer, when I see things that are wrong or what I consider bad, I look for how do I fix it. So.
I'm David Brennan, and I'm leaving. This was sold to me under false pretenses. I'm going to be lynched. Because I actually go quite along with the title of this event. I have my most recent nonfiction book is called Vivid Tomorrows, Science Fiction in Hollywood, and it contains a lot of my essays and reviews about Hollywood, and the general theme that goes through it is that for all of its faults, following Sturgeon's law, 90% of anything is crap. Well, 99% when it comes to Hollywood or film. Nevertheless, there's so much good stuff, and even some of the bad stuff has helped to save our lives. I think we're here today because of the chidings and what I call self-preventing prophecies of science fiction, and mostly film. The movies that help to prevent terrible futures include Dr. Strangelove, On the Beach, Failsafe, War Games, Testament, The Day After, all having to do with nuclear war. The China Syndrome, various virus movies, things like that. Soylent Green helped to recruit millions of environmentalists and get things rolling on all this, and I took advantage of that in my ecological novel, Earth. I don't see Star Wars helping. I see Star Trek helping. I think, you know, the very Faustian lessons in Star Trek II, one of the best movies ever made, not just sci-fi movies, ever made, Wrath of Khan, is that we can do stuff. I see the lessons. Star Wars is extremely preachy. But I defy you to tell me a particular lesson or even one thing ever said by that supposed wise guy that horrible green oven met Yoda that was ever actually wise.
Okay, well, we'll get to that.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Absolute bullshit. It's total bullshit.
I am agreeing with him on that.
Raging.
I am agreeing with him on that.
Guys,
it's too black and white.
Guys,
it's
let me. Everything is great. Let me please.
You tried.
Exactly.
Let me please.
Moderator.
The panel. I'm going to moderate the panel. So, all of this in mind, I'm going to moderate the panel, which means that there are going to be rules. The first rule is, you guys are here to see the panels. You see the panelists. So we are going to let them talk. At the end of this period of time, then we are going to open it up to questions. Possibly comments if you can keep them fairly succinct. As far as the panelists go, I want everyone to be able to give their opinion. And so I would like for you guys to give succinct answers, not yes, necessarily yes or no, but fairly brief answers so that we can get to everyone's opinions. Obviously, we have opinions that are very strong, which is cool. And I like that different point of view, but I want to keep the panel kind of moving. And so I would like the answers to be somewhat succinct so that everybody gets a chance to answer, and then we can have time at the end for what I am sure will be a very lively debate. And so, the first question to the panelists, and we'll start here on the end and we'll work our way down, and then I'll ask another question, will be, since Star Wars is essentially American mythology, it is, I feel, part of our actual modern mythology in that regard. Regardless of how you feel about it, it is ingrained in our culture in such a way that everyone knows what lightsabers are, everyone knows what a Jedi is. Because of that, do you think, because of that elevated sort of status, that this is what is now causing the current amount of controversy in the fact that now Star Wars comes out and people are arguing about it and they don't like anything anymore? So we'll start here on the end.
Short answer, yes. Anything that lives as long as Star Wars has and has wrapped itself so deep into our culture is going to cause generational, cultural, caste level, socioeconomic rifts between what should be, what fans will say is Star Wars and what should be Star Wars. You know, anything that's disposable entertainment, you're just going to dismiss and you're not going to want to argue it. But something like this has not just, it's not just entertainment, it's become part of our lives to the point where it's not the story so much as remembering where we were and what we were, who we were at the time we saw it for the first time. And anything that differs from that tends to get people pissed off because it's not of the body, as they would say. And in this, I think at this point in time, when opinions are as free as the internet, it becomes the first draft is I'm going to be confrontational about it and defend what I believe to be true and for me.
Okay,
that was good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah. I think with Star Wars, at least with me, I see it as something I always did with my family. My mom loves to tell the story that when we were growing up, she had to buy Barbies for my sister, but Star Wars figures for me. She loves that story. She tells everybody. It makes me smile. And what I remember is going with my parents to see it. My 10th birthday, we went to go, me and seven other little girls, we all went to see Return of the Jedi. You know, all of us were just there. And we have stories of familial stories. My sister would agree totally with you on Yoda. Once he got on the screen, she was about four, and she grabbed my mother's face and said, I want to go home. Mom does not remember the rest of that movie. Meanwhile, I have no idea what's going on, but that's awesome. For me, also, it was, Carrie Fisher. I saw someone that I could be. And she, you know, over the years she gave me a lot of strength, you know, good old space mom. So for me it's emotional, it's, you know, part of my family. And I believe, you know, Star Wars, you can have all these thoughts and feelings and beliefs, and if there's room for it, you just be kind.
Why don't you come on, chime in?
Yeah, no. I am the moderator.
No. Let's go to a vote.
New rule.
All right. Chaz.
Oh, see, only like two people. So we're moving on.
Chaz.
All right.
Yeah, I guess author guest of honor trumps artist guest of honor. Yeah. So, all right. I think that because it is mythology, I believe that Star Wars as a franchise, as an IP, as it were, it really begins to take on an almost religious aspect for a lot of people. And so people feel it's not just entertainment for a lot of people. It becomes akin to religion, and it becomes in some ways a way for people to identify who they themselves are based on Star Wars, because it intrinsically latches itself to their hearts. So therefore, they identify so strongly with Luke Skywalker, with Princess Leia, with Yoda, with, you know, Chewbacca. Palpatine, we won't talk about those guys. But because they latch onto that so much, that any change or any perceived change to the characters that they have latched onto and identified with, it now becomes a change to who they are as people. And I think, and whether you agree with that particular mindset or not, I feel that that's probably what's going on. So now we
move on. Excellent. I'm glad that arm twisted you.
I think when you look at how Star Wars affected culture, is that it was one of the first, when the first movie came out, it was one of the first, even before it became a franchise, but one of the first real multimedia properties. Like, when it came out, there were toys. There were tie-in novels. There was the radio play. There was
Star Trek had it as well, but it came later, if I remember.
Evidence that you're right is the fact that Lucas was able to hold on to the merchandising rights because they didn't expect them to be worth it.
They didn't expect it to be worth it.
That's proof that you were right.
Yeah. And, but, so it was one of the first properties that when you went home from seeing that movie, you could pick up the action figures, you could pick up the toys and say, I'm reliving this. I am inserting myself into this. And it was, because it was such a visual story, and it was very easy to say, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. And as time went on, people just grew up with it and said, okay, and it launched a whole new way of marketing things. I mean, I'm a kid of the 80s. Every cartoon had a toy line, you know? We had 30-minute commercials for our toys that taught us, these are the characters, this is the situations. And it, Star Wars kind of tipped that off. And so when there is a major change to how we see the characters and how the characters act, it hits harder because it is, you know, it is modern mythology. And so many people grew up on it. And they don't want the change, but sometimes they do, and they just don't like how it changed. And especially if it did help inspire them to do things. You know, if they got inspired by the designs, they got inspired by the not real science, if they got inspired by the characters, you know, and the personalities, to see those characters change so fundamentally or those technologies change so fundamentally, it bothers people.
Yeah, well, I agree that Star Wars is fantastically mythological. Lucas benefited from the fact that he had access to full orchestration by John Williams. He had access to incredible new technologies and special effects. And so he was able to provide us with the first truly immersive experience of what science fiction can offer. And that is romance on a big scale. And because he was first, I think that had a lot to do with the result. Of course, Star Trek was first in other ways, and you can see that those ways affect some degree of the difference between the fans. I want to, full disclosure here, I left The Empire Strikes Back humming and convinced that we had an absolute genius, greatest myth maker of our time. And I watched the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles hungrily, and I said, this guy really loves our civilization, because Indiana Jones, there's always this 20-minute portion of the Young Indiana Jones episodes in which he holds conversations with one of the luminous minds of the early 20th century. I often would ask in subsequent years, what the hell happened to him? And somebody shouted from the audience, she left him! Because in Return of the Jedi, a movie that whose overall plot arc I didn't really mind all that much, but there's about 20 lines of obscenely horrible evil dialogue. God, David, restrain yourself. That could be changed. I mean, the moral quandary that Lucas faced with. Cut my head off and all your friends will be saved and the entire galaxy will be freed, but you'll become a bad person. Okay. Leia, am I a bad person? You could, if you write, put in some real quandary there, but he was angry that Leigh Brackett and Kasdan and Kirshner had delivered such a wonderful story in Empire, so he decided to do it all himself. The secret is to know your limitations, as Dirty Harry said at the end of that great movie, Magnum Force. And hire people. J.J. Abrams, for instance, knows dialogue and characters so well, like he did in Lost. He would not, as I said in the previous panel, he would not know a plot if it face-hugged him.
That's the borrow.
He borrowed, oh my God, the last trilogy. Oh my God. Let's have another way to kill every planet. But let me just conclude by saying that Star Wars goes to the fundamental mythology, the mother genre of fantasy, which is that it's about demigods. Achilles, the Sutras, Bhagavad Gita, Journey to the West, so on. The mother genre is fantasy, and it's all about demigods, Achilles, Odysseus, and so on, who are so much, deserve to be so much greater than us. And you can see this in the metaphor of the ship. The ship in Star Wars is a little World War I fighter banking against non-existent air. The silk scarf demigod fighter pilot above the trenches with his gunner, the knight with his squire, the droid in the back, it's exactly the same. And there is no room aboard a sub fighter for any discussion of the Republic, and it is never discussed. It never does anything. It's except that they lament the Republic, and then they let J.J. Abrams destroy 10,000 worlds of the Republic just for a plot device, so there's no help.
Yeah.
If you look at Star Trek, the ship is a naval vessel. It is a, like the Beagle, like, it is a plenipotentiary ambassadorial craft that can fight if it must, but the captain is not a demigod. She is at best way, way above average and needs the help from way above average people in every episode. And in half the episodes, the Federation is a topic. Sometimes it's made horrible mistakes to be discussed. Sometimes it's so much better than us to be proud of as a goal. But you can see that this is a profound difference in central theme. And I think that I went on long enough, except that Luke is a great guy. He's a fine fellow. He's just about a 2-watt bulb.
Okay. So I'll ask one more question, and then I think we'll open it up to the audience, because unfortunately time continues to march forward. So what can we do, or what can they do? We'll look at Disney for help in this regard. But if you could make a suggestion to someone who could actually do the thing, what can they do to make it so that Star Wars was basically universally accepted again, in your opinion? So we'll start here on this end again.
Oh, heavy question.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I wrote that myself.
There's a Disney spy in the audience taking fervent notes.
I really hope so.
I think that Disney feeds off of that diversity. It is the conversation drives marketing. It drives interest. Conflict is good to Disney because we're talking about it. It's just like news. If nothing happens, there's no coverage. Disney wants the old school because they can sell toys to guys like me, the replicas of the original Kenner action figures for $30 a pop when they were used to be at 99 cents at Katie's in the Kitty City. And they're going to do the deluxe Lego sets for the IT fatherless or the childless IT professional who can spend that kind of money. And as a father of four, I'm envious. I'm worried about that. And I will buy stuff for kids that they let me play with. So I don't think that there is anything that we can tell the marketing people of Disney that will get them to change because there's no benefit to it.
You know, you hit on a lot of things, but was it even bad publicity is good publicity? You know, I look at it as Star Wars from my heart, from my feelings, and I see, you know, what happened with Marie Traum, Ken, mm-hmm. and Daisy Ridley, mm-hmm. And then also when third trilogy, when the whole noise with John Boyega,
yeah,
and that, which was stupid, and then also that wonderful actress, the woman of color, and Obi-Wan?
Yeah.
And, you know, I would like to see at least Disney taking a moral stance. I'm like, no, we still have that. They're an amazing artists. That's what I would like to see.
Right on. I would, if I may speak briefly, I would agree with you. My personal stance on that is that Disney should not do anything other than continue to cast diverse characters and continue to create really wonderful people, because theoretically speaking, there are millions and millions of different kinds of beings in the universe, and they should not shy away from that just because some other people go, well, those aliens don't look like me. It's like, well, that's kind of the point. And so, but I am also a punk in almost every sense of the word, in the sense that if it were me and I were running Disney, I would say, you know what, I'm going to put more diversity in there just to really, really piss you guys off, because yes. F you. Yeah. That would be my whole statement is F you. If you don't like it, you know there's other things you can watch.
Yeah.
I think when it comes down to it, it's a matter of where do you want the story to go? Where does Disney want the story to go? What do fans want to see? And the fans have been voting with their dollars in large portions and in their viewership. When I look at the stuff that works and the stuff that doesn't, I love the diversity in Star Wars. It makes it more universal. As Dave said, you know, it is the mother genre. You know, it is something that is universal across human society. So why are we not getting more actors and characters that represent that? I think that's great. I think when you look at the stuff that worked in the Disney era, Rogue One, yes, I think Rogue One was an awesome movie.
For one thing, there's no damn Force mutants.
Yes. You know, it helped. It did. It showed the little soldiers. It showed a Star Wars war movie, which is what something we had been begging for years. Andor, same thing. You know, it worked so well because it showed the grassroots soldiers. It showed the rise of the rebellion. Give us more of that kind of thing. Most of the stuff that Filoni has done with Rebels and the Clone Wars and the Ahsoka series has worked. And the fans have liked it. Has it had missteps?
Yes.
The original had missteps. Okay, we had Ewoks instead of Wookiees ripping people's arms out of their sockets, for one thing. But, you know, that's
at least the dialogue was good. Oh, wait.
Well. Sorry. I love you, Padme. I hate sand. But short of completely saying, okay, we're going to do a reboot, which don't, please God, don't do that. Short of doing that, you have to put somebody in charge who knows the franchise, who wants to see the franchise do well, bring in elements that they know the fans will respond well to, Thrawn, Rogue Squadron, that kind of thing, and let them run with it instead of, hi, we hired J.J. Abrams because everybody loves him, and he's going to do one movie, and then somebody else is going to do the second movie, and then he's going to screw it up so bad that somebody else is going to have to come and do the third. Or he's going to have to bring J.J. Abrams back in. Instead of saying, okay, here's the guy in charge, or the lady in charge, or the person in charge. They set the story, and we follow that.
Yeah.
Well, there was such a person named George Lucas.
That too.
And we got the prequels.
Yeah.
And I spoke earlier about how I'm a child of the 60s and can enter a flashback stone state. And therefore, I was able to eliminate all but the appreciation of colors. And I sat through all three movies and enjoyed them. I told the part of me that had any critical faculties, including moral, to shut the hell up. Because you take what pleasure you can get in life. Look, at this point in the Star Wars universe, I don't know where we are on the timeline or anything like that. The fact of the matter is, I thought we got the Republic back, and then they let it J.J. Abrams, with a single shot, a scene that took 20 seconds, kill 10,000 planets from one shot from a super Death Star, violating all physical laws of the speed of light, simply in order to deny the rebels any help. As far as I'm concerned, when you have so much evil being committed on screen, the scene in which Yoda orders all the Jedi who are secret agents, they're detectives, they're special each individually, orders them to perform a frontal assault into the bottom of an arena filled with laser-equipped enemies, and then shows up the moment they have all been wiped out with an army that he had ordered. Don't tell me otherwise. He collects it. I'm sorry, this is the most evil character in the history of all human mythology. And I would not blame all the aliens in the galaxy for ganging up, and this would be a good Star Wars. Ganging up and hunting down all humans. Because it's one noble family from Naboo that did all this. I mean, Mom, who Yoda should have bought out of slavery with petty cash. Mom, she was on the trade route between Naboo and Coruscant. What's better interpretation that she was abandoned there? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody else is from the same Nabooian mutant family. They're all extreme dangerous to the galaxy. Hunt them down. I'd sign up. Destroy all humans.
All right. So, you've given us lots to think about, guys. But I like the diversity of opinion, because discussions like this, I think, are more valuable when there are a lot of different opinions for people to consider. So, somebody back there has a question. We'll start with you, sir, in the red.
The question I have for you. You ask, can there be anything done about the toxicity of the current Star Wars? Is, I don't think so. And the reason why is this: in 1977, we all go to a movie, and you could write a movie that mostly everyone's going to agree with, right? I don't think that's possible today. I think, and so the reason why it's toxic is not because the medium is toxic, the movie is toxic, it's because we're toxic. And that's happened over 50 years. And it's a reflection of us, how we have changed.
Okay, that's a pretty, that's pretty
interesting. I will say something to that. And this is actually something that my dad said, and I've kind of expanded on it since, is that 150 years ago, news and thought traveled at the speed of a horse, and then it traveled at the speed of a train, and then it traveled at the speed of a plane, and then traveled at the speed of voice. And with the internet, you know, the early nascent internet, you didn't just post something and say, oh, I'm just gonna post this. Like, no, you actually thought about it and you posted it, but it traveled at the speed of light. Because of these things and social media and that kind of thing, now you have people whose information travels at the speed of thought. As soon as they have a thought, they post it and they put it out there, whether it's something that they've thought out or something that they've considered or just a knee-jerk reaction. They have to post it immediately because they have to get that instant dopamine rush of, oh, somebody's responding to me. When 20 years ago, this would have been a person, I didn't like it, into an empty room.
Well, I think you have a very good point there, but there's also the fact that when some of us were young, we all, the next day, discussed the same TV shows we had seen the night before. And something like Fox News wasn't possible because there was respect for professionalism. And now war against all professionalism is an essential feature for at least the duration of Phase 8 of the American Civil War. But I really, I want to say to Shelby, look, I'm not trying to undermine the emotions that you get from this. I can well understand it. I felt that way after a number of these different, both Star Wars and Star Trek. I said that Star Trek 2 made me feel wonderful. Star Trek 3 betrayed it. Denying Kirk, this guy who's given us so much as a character, the solace of having a son. I mean, what a terrible thing. It's almost as bad as what they did with Aliens 3. That was but during the era when every second movie was great, and every third movie in a sci-fi franchise betrayed it. It's actually an incredible rhythm. It happened in all of the great franchises in the 80s and 90s. But let's have another question.
Actually, well, hang on. Before we do, the gentleman here at the end wishes to speak.
Oh, please.
I just want to say that this division of fandom goes back all the way to 1980. I remember going to see Empire Strikes Back on opening day and being, as a child who was thrilled with Star Wars and the structure and everything about it, coming out going, what the hell was that? This is a story that had no ending. This is not my Star Wars. And on the playground at school, we were all divided because in my generation, because Empire wasn't the same thing that we expected, it was the weakest of the original trilogy.
Wow.
You cannot say that today. But it was true in Gen X. You would go in the playground and go, he got his hand cut off. There was no resolution. Is Han really dead? What the hell is going on here? This is not blowing up the Death Star, hip hip hooray. This is drama. We didn't want that shit. And that is the very beginning of what we're experiencing today on a grander scale. I'm not satisfied.
So delighted with a perspective that I had not heard before. This is what we come here for.
I hated Empire for the same reason. The good guys! You know, they're supposed to win. You know, I was 80, I was in first grade. And I was like, I'm sorry, no.
You're so gorgeous.
I
was older. I admit, I'm older now. I was younger than that. I'm younger than that now.
That's all right, let's get it. So, anybody have a question?
Well, she
question. Yes.
Thank you. No, you guys are talking about Disney. Now, I know Disney lately has been going through issues with some, gay trans things in Florida. You know, they've been having that conflict. You kind of alluded to some of the issues of, I feel like there was some backlash against the feminist tone, particularly of the second series, and the people of color being in there. So I just wonder, we're talking about the fans being toxic. It seems like there's a lot of reasons people might not like it, but some of that, another thing I noticed is there was a point where people were actually favoring the dark side. And I just wonder if some of this isn't coming down to a cultural battle between white supremacy, patriarchy, and the rest of us. I'd be curious about your thoughts on that.
I would say that is probably part of it, for sure. Because of our recent political landscape, I'm just going to say that and be politically correct in this regard, hopefully. Because of our recent political landscape over the last 10 years, I feel that there are a lot of people who feel vindicated in their views, no matter how horrible they are. They feel vindicated and justified in being able to say the most horrible things that they can possibly imagine because they feel that they are entitled to do so. Whereas I believe in the past, people at least seemed to have restraint. I'm not sure that people have actually changed. I don't really know that human beings have actually really changed overly much in the last, say, 150 years. We've always had toxic people in our societies. They just have normally been locked in someone's cellar and not allowed to come out in public.
Into their own echo chamber.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, because these people feel justified, they say things that in their heart of hearts are very mean-spirited. And then other people pick up on that, and then they say things in order to get attention, to be performative.
because they say, oh, well, these people are saying these horrible things. Well, I'm going to say these horrible things too, just to do things like we're going to own the libs, or I'm going to say this because I want to be edgy. I want to be controversial. I want people to go, oh, this guy, oh yeah, he speaks his mind, blah, blah, blah. So I think there is kind of a wave of that. And so, yeah, and there's certainly white supremacy and things like that involved, and misogynism, and, you know, et cetera. I think that's all part of it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I agree.
Okay. I agree. Yeah. I think it is, again, it's, you know, the people have lost their echo chamber has grown significantly, and people want to react, and they want to get those reactions. So they do react. And it, for whatever reason, the Star Wars fandom tends to be the one that gets the most reactions. Even though, I mean, I remember seeing things like, you know, wait, the new Star Trek is going to have a female captain? It's like, yeah, that's Star Trek. That's, you know, but people got upset about it.
Well, idiots got upset about it.
Yeah, idiots got upset about it.
Idiots, you're
and
right.
Now the idiots have a megaphone.
No, you are right that the idiots have a megaphone, and you are right that there is reaction to the change. But it is in the context of the Great American Project, which is at grindingly slow pace, shamefully slow pace, at an abysmally slow pace that's merely faster than any other civilization ever did it before, mm-hmm. We have the project of expanding the circle of inclusion. Now, at times it's been horribly violent, and at times like the 1860s, it was successful, excuse me, and incomplete in vast ways, mm-hmm. that had to be solved by later generations. But it is the inexorable ratcheting American project. So you have Barbie and all this. No, there's no question that all of these franchises are being more inclusive in their characters. Mm-hmm. They are adding more people, characters of color, more characters, more women are being elevated to authority, more people of weird taste. Riker told this alien, I don't care whether you're male or female, let's jump in the sack. But that was some time ago. So what I'm trying to say is, let's put this in the context of what overall, the guys with the megaphones who are screaming, are seeing that they're losing.
Yes. And so they scream louder.
And Disney knows what direction things are going. They're being screamed at from both sides because it's not fast enough, or some people don't like it. I have no complaint with that in Star Wars, Star Trek, all that sort of stuff. That's been, my complaints have been about whether or not this fantastically huge and persuasive mythology that is fundamentally romantic could have been romantic in ways that did not extol repetition of mistakes. I mean, like Luke, how in the world J.J. Abrams thought he could get away with having Luke do exactly the same things that he saw didn't work for Obi-Wan and didn't work for Yoda. Go into hiding, betray everybody, hermitage, you become a surly. It got repeated because J.J. Abrams couldn't think of anything else.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
And he was kind of given orders not to. When they erased the expanded universe, I had a conversation with Timothy Zahn right when that was announced. Right after that was announced, and I'm like, what do you think of that? He's like, to an extent, he agreed, but at the same time, he's like, it's still out there, and they should still draw from it, because there were some very good stories in the expanded universe, and in the last few years, they have started drawing from that well again, and said, hey, who's a character that everybody loved? Everybody loved Grand Admiral Thrawn in the Heir to the Empire trilogy. We're going to bring him back, you know? Everybody loved Wedge in the Rogue Squadron books. We're going to sort of bring him back, and we're going to insult him in the most insane way in episode 9. He was in a gunner's chair. I'm not going there.
Can't go there.
Don't bring up episode 9. I couldn't even watch it stoned.
I still think the best end of episode 8 would have been Wedge coming down in the X-Wing going, Sopo, let me show you how it's done again. And, you know,
let's move on down here real quick. Did you have something?
Oh, sure. Oh. Yeah, I think J.J. Abrams is a hack. I think he ruined Star Trek. I think he has, as David said, he knows elements. What things do we need to add into the stew? And he doesn't care about quantity. It's just, is it in there? Do we have diversity? Okay, you have diversity. Are you doing anything that is representation? It's, oh, I've got this character of color now. I'm done. And I don't have to, I'm going to redo the original Star Wars, so I don't have to actually write a script.
He did it twice.
Yes, exactly. And he didn't expect he had to do it, so he crammed another rewrite into it after he screwed up the second movie in that trilogy. But I think Disney as a court, when Disney allows filmmakers to be filmmakers, you get Andor, you get Rogue One. But when it comes to that main tent pole, they're thinking about selling toys, and they're thinking about how many different markets can they get their action figures out to. And that's worse than Lucas when he was the architect of, I'm going to make a movie that's going to sell toys.
Except that Disney did one thing that I'm grateful for, and they stopped the freaking preaching of things that I consider evil. And Lucas, he preached what I consider to be horrible things relentlessly. Mm. Faux Zen floating above a tatami mat bowed before the guru stuff. And Disney toned that way down.
Did you have some?
I did. I wanted to respond to you, David.
Okay.
And what you said, I never thought about, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating. And it won't change my opinion that I have.
You enjoy it. You have a love.
I do.
Love trumps any of these things.
Absolutely.
We can't need to come up with another word.
But I really am like, holy crap, he's right. And but I'm like, okay. But I also want to tell you, I bought the book that you had where you presented both sides. I can't remember what it's called, but it was the Star Wars, and you had presenting for the...
Oh, Star Wars on Trial!
Yes, I bought that so that I could prepare for this, and I got it, and I'm like, this is so not a quick read.
it was so much fun. Ben Bella Books, Star Wars on Trial, I really should have mentioned that. There's a portion of that in Vivid Tomorrows. But Star Wars on Trial, one of Lucas's novelizers was the defense attorney. I was the prosecutor. We each had essays that were the opening statements attacking or defending Star Wars. And then on each of 7 charges, I brought in an essayist who supported the charge, and he brought in an essayist. This is what Ben Bella Books does. They leap, and they intellectually parasite on popular culture. It's incredible. But but in between each of these testimonies, for and against Star Wars, we had these courtroom scenes. You know, snapping suspenders, the droid judge would find me. The droid judge would threaten him with imprisonment if he didn't get back on topic. It was loads of fun. And got nowhere. And there was an after poll in which the jury, who was all the people who bothered to show up at the primitive website in those days, voted. And of course, Lucas was acquitted. But I loved the cover. The cover shows George Lucas in the dock because we couldn't use any trademarked Star Wars character, so it was all nondescript aliens and droids and things, and robots and things. But there was George Lucas in the dock answering questions because he's not copyrighted.
All right, so.
I was
impressed with
the cover.
And really quick, what's the name of that book?
Star Wars on Trial.
Okay, excellent. So, Star Wars on Trial. So, we have time for one more question from the audience that we will try to answer in a fairly quick fashion before the everything is over. So let's take something from this side. I know a couple of you guys were
Julie,
raising hands.
Did you have a question?
Anyone? Bueller?
Did you have a question? I saw
you. Okay, then this side. Anyone?
Comment?
No, question.
Bummer.
No question, okay. Then,
Let me rephrase it. Okay. The thing was, what do you do about toxic Star Wars fans? And doing something about toxicity, you're talking heresy against Star Wars. How do you non-toxify that?
How do we make fandom in general less
non-toxic? Yeah. There's always going to be toxicity in fandom whenever they make a change. Look at the uproar when the new Battlestar Galactica came out. And they're like, wait, Starbuck's a woman, and Boomer is no longer is a Asian woman instead of a black guy, and you know, just all these changes, and people are like, they couldn't handle it at first, and then it came out, and it started great. I'm going to say that.
Look, there's always loud idiots, but the fact is, I grumbled when they did it because I thought all this money's going into a really, really dumb concept, and boy, the writing got them out of that as far as I was concerned. I was hooked by the writing in that series.
Yeah. I would say the best way to kind of quell what's going on with the fandom in terms of the toxicity is the same as it's always been. It's quality. Mm-hmm. You know, you make really, really good stories, and that will shut people up. So, you know, I mean, I remember somewhere on Facebook somebody said, well, you know, this guy was a racist, but he said, well, you know, you'll never find a black author who can write as good as Alexandre Dumas. Three Musketeers sets the standard for all fantasy everywhere, and you'll never find a black writer who writes as good as Alexandre Dumas. And then they showed him a picture of Alexandre Dumas. And strangely enough, shut him right up. So that's my answer to toxicity. Just show them a picture of Alexandre Dumas, and you're good. So, really quick.
Alexandre Dumas?
Yeah. Either way, yeah. Final statement.
I would say it starts at home. When I complained a lot about Empire Strikes Back, my father gave me the best advice. He said, I wish you would put that passion into your grades. And I translate that to my kids. Whenever they're upset about something, it's like, really, is that your priority? Is that the life-changing thing you want to die in? Star Wars? Or even for me, Ghostbusters? Chill. And then they radiate that outward, and it's the only thing you can really do. Ragers are going to rage.
Ghostbusters was the most original film I ever saw. Mm-hmm. It was just terrific.
That's right. The original still holds.
Yeah.
And everything was wrong with the second
one. Final statement from you.
With the toxicity, you know, just keep, you know, doing what I'm doing. You know, I put my best foot forward. They take with the toxic, you know, they are so convinced they're right, and then you're convinced you're right, nobody's going to. Yeah. with what David and I have, it's like, your points are valid and they're awesome. It does not change my point of view, but they're still amazing.
Well, you're amazing. Oh, I think we should make you president.
Okay.
Well, at least you would insist on sweetness and love and joy.
Absolutely.
Stop being a
dick. Well, there you go. Your first presidential order. So guys, thank you guys so much for coming out. Thank you guys for attending TusCon.
Thanks to our moderator.
Thank you for listening to the Creative Playin' Podcast Network. If you enjoyed our show, please check out D&D Journey of the 5th Edition and Ragnarok and Roll a Scion Hero to Ragnarok Story. Also, check out our Patreon page for more content and behind-the-scenes things, as well as joining us for a one-shot game or two.